I am a doctoral student in reading science at Mount St. Joseph University, and this is kind of like random to me that I ended up there. It's very hard to get in. They only accept 12% of people. So when I applied, I was like, we'll see. And so I feel very fortunate that I am there. I learned from some amazing, amazing humans, and I feel very, very fortunate. In the state of Idaho, there are two of us in that program, and their whole idea was is to have pockets of all of us throughout the country. So it was exciting to be the first one in Idaho and to have a friend, and they just accepted another one, so there's three of us. So I'm really excited to be a part of that. I have a K-12 Idaho certificate in literacy. I'm Orton Gillingham trained. If you hear that, that is dyslexia structured literacy training. So that's where that instructional piece comes in, specific to that. And I have taught first through fifth grades, and I've mentioned I miss my own classroom. But all of those things, and I say this legitimately, none of those things would have ever existed because I never thought I would have been a teacher. I never thought I would work in a public school system. I never thought I would do any of those things. But this is my second child. His name is Matthew. And look at how excited. This is the first day of kindergarten. That boy looks excited, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Well, it was super hard. It was way harder than I ever thought it would be for him. And that little smiling face had many, many tears, lots of heartache, lots of struggles. And it threw me into a world that I became super passionate about it. Now I do it full time. I don't have any hobbies. I call my job my jobby. I really just do this all the time. So without this kiddo, I wouldn't do any of those things that were on that page. And so I feel like this is the great crowd, right? You guys do things for your kids because they motivate you. And that's exactly what happened with this kiddo. And well, at the very end, I'll show you a picture of him and give you an update. So there's my teaser, so stick around. So here's our agenda. We're going to discuss what do we need to do to read? Like, what does that entail? We're going to talk about the brain. We're going to look at a typical reading brain, and we're going to look at a struggling reading brain and the differences. And then we're going to look at what is the core deficit for somebody that is a profile of a dyslexic reader. What is the core deficit with them? And then we're going to, I wish I had time to give you all the instructional things, but it's really hard to do in 45 minutes, and this is an overview. So I'll kind of throw in some of those things as we go along, but just know it's a career. We're going to look at some definitions of dyslexia. Idaho has a definition, and then there's a brand new, it came out in early January, I think. The International Dyslexia Association has a new definition, so we'll look at that as well. We'll talk about, again, like just a sprinkling of instruction. I wish I could do more. And then we'll look at myths. That's usually my favorite part because it's pretty insightful when we get to the myths. And as a parent, I went down like every rabbit hole there could be. So I like to give some warnings about, for my particular situation, all those rabbit holes and all those myths that really just took time away from helping my child. So if it could help you help not fall down those rabbit holes, that would be great. And then I have some resources. This is a QR code to a Padlet. It has a list of the resources that I think all of them are on there. I'm gonna double check afterwards to make sure I got them all on there that I talked about. But there is a series of resources for this session that I think are either like next steps for learning or a good place to review. And I'm hoping I have time at the end to kind of like walk through some of those resources with you so you kind of know what you're looking at when you get in there. And if questions come up, I will kind of try to make a note, and if I think I have a good resource, I'll pop it in there. So that thing might change a little bit, but it will be based off of your questions. Does that make sense? Okay. So the first thing, like I teach teachers now, right? That's part of my job. And the first thing we do with teachers is make sure they understand what good readers need, what readers need to become readers. What do they need to do? So we use this as a way to kind of help sort through all of the things, because there's a lot of things to go on in instruction, right? What are the most important things, and what does each child need to become successful? So we use this model. It was designed from Goff and Tumner. The research was done in 1986 originally, but it has been replicated, so we know that it's really pretty consistent. And if you ever see a science of reading or structured literacy or dyslexia seminar, you can always vet somebody by if they start off with at least a reference to them. If they're referencing this, it's probably a good sign. You might be listening to somebody who knows what they're doing. So we have to get the words off the page. So we have word recognition, right? So I have to be able to identify the C, and the C says k, and I can blend it together, and the word is k, at, cat. You have to be able to do that, right? And there's some sub-skills that go under that, but that's a big umbrella of some sub-skills. And we'll talk about those sub-skills in just a minute. But that's not all you have to do, right? Because you have to also know what the word means. So we call that language comprehension. So we have a bucket of word recognition. You have to get the words off the page. And then we have a bucket that you have to have enough vocabulary or understand how language works well enough to be able to understand what it means. So you need both buckets. And if you have both buckets, and everything's working well, notice the multiplication sign. So if I say, oh, I'm going to give you a 1, you have perfect word recognition, giving you a 1 here, and you have perfect language comprehension, in the end, you get perfect reading comprehension. I can get the words off the page well, I can read the words, I understand what those words mean, and then I can make meaning of it. You need both of those. So, what if I have a child that is amazing at getting words off the page? But guess what? They don't know what they mean. What's 1 times 0?
0.
Okay, this is why we use this model to really emphasize you can't have one without the other. You have to have both. So even though you might have a skill here, and this happens a lot with autistic children, you'll see, where they have a great memory, and they love, some of them really love letters. And so they become amazing at saying words, but they don't, because their deficit is with language and associations in society, guess what makes it hard for them? Comprehension. So that, we approach these children in different ways. If you have a deficit there, I'm going to help you in your language comprehension skills. All right. So let's say, oh man, it's really hard to get words off the page, so we're going to give you a 0. And we're using extremes for purpose of conversation, but guess what? If I read you a story, you could retell it to me with amazing detail. And you can make all sorts of connections to things that have happened to you in the past, and you would be able to make this wonderful conversation. In fact, teachers will say to me all the time, I don't understand why they struggle. When they're in class, they have all of the answers, and they're always talking with their peers and having great ideas. Well, 0 times 1 is?
0.
Isn't that awful? That you can have one deficit that just sinks you. It's such an amazing skill that we have to be able to do in society today. So, for my next illustration, let's say I have a little bit of word recognition. I'm like okay-ish. Maybe I'm okay with some of the basic letters and sounds, but when we get into vowel teams, like O-I and E-E, like, oh, that's super hard and I'm not doing very well. So I'm going to give you a 0.5. And sometimes you're able to make connections. Sometimes you're able to retell the story. So I'm going to give you a 0.5. Well, 0.5 times 0.5 is? They don't even, like, stinky, right? You can have okay skills in each bucket, but they compound because it's a multiplication problem. So we use this to kind of frame what do our children need. A dyslexic profile is going to look more like this. If we're talking about a pure dyslexic, they're going to be more like this. And there is a spectrum, and we'll talk about that, but there's a spectrum of ability and disability here. But this is going to be what we call a dyslexic profile. Our deficit is getting the word off the page is incredibly difficult for me, okay? So I told you that this is a simple view. That it doesn't mean that reading is simple, but it means that this is a way to view it to kind of help yourself sort where is my child struggling and what would it look like to help them, okay? So this is a graphic that goes really nicely with this model. So you can see we have the same factors or buckets. We have word recognition and we have language comprehension, but it strings out all of the things that you need to become a good reader. So if we look under word recognition, and that's kind of where we're going to, because you're here for dyslexia, I am giving a session on language disorders, and I'll get into this. But because we only have so little time together, I'm going to focus on where a dyslexic profile would struggle in this model, which would be this bottom part. And I'm going to use the terms that are used there because if you have a child with dyslexia, you have to know these terms. So I'm going to start using them, and hopefully if you leave here, you're going to feel a little bit more comfortable. So when you go and read literature, you're going to feel a little bit more confident. So So, phonological awareness, I always think phone. Phone is sound, okay? Phonological awareness has to do with the sound. The sound system is difficult, and without a good understanding of sounds and how to break them apart, the letters don't have anywhere to stick. So I call the sounds the peg. If I can identify the sound, like in sat, I'm really good at that, then that letter makes sense to me, and now there's meaning to it. But, and we're going to get into it, if that's hard, and it's hard for me to break it apart, I don't know what that letter is. There's nothing for it to stick to. So phonological awareness is sound. Okay, and we're going to talk about this more because, this is going to unveil this early, that is the core deficit of a dyslexic, so we're going to get into it more. So that's your introduction. Phonological awareness is your ability to work with sound. Decoding is the ability to get the word off the page, and you have to be able to connect the letter and the sound to be able to do that. We just talked about if the sound discrimination is hard, the letter has nowhere to stick. There's no Velcro for it. So that makes the decoding hard. This phrase, alphabetical principle, if you are a parent navigating this, you will see that. All that means is that your child is enlightened with the fact that every letter represents a sound. That's all that means. It's a big fancy phrase. That's all it means. And we hope that children get that in kindergarten. And if they don't, it's actually harder for them because we're working to break apart that every letter is represented by a sound. That is an insight that not all children have because we speak in streams of speech. It is not normal to go s-at, m-at. We say sat-mat. That is hard for some children, okay? And then sight recognition. In schools today, I spend a lot of time talking about the myths of sight recognition. So I will give you like a little bit of what I share with teachers. Sight recognition from researchers that do research, it does not mean a list of words to memorize. What it means is that that child has had enough experience with that word spelling, the pronunciation, and the meaning that through experience, their minds can just recall it because their mind is a muscle and they can just look at it. So we say every word wants to be a sight word, right? Every word wants to be a sight recognition. We want to be able to see it and say it. Your little children, when they start recognizing their name is now a sight word. Okay, so it's not a long list of words. That is something, a misnomer that was done inside of education for a long time. So we're working that every word becomes a sight word eventually. So we're going to talk about the brain. So we're going to simplify this because there's no reason for us to go in too deep, but just enough that you kind of have your bearings with you as you go out and navigate things. So when we talk about reading, effective reading happens mostly, I'm going to be very careful, mostly on the left side, not exclusively, just mostly, okay? So you're going to, like, some of you are younger than me, but if you were born in the 80s and you grew up in the 90s, this is a hang 10 symbol, okay? So everybody make a hang 10, okay? And then on the left side of your head, you're going to go like this, okay? So you're going to tap your temple and then behind your ear, okay? You're orienting yourself to the side of the brain we're talking about if we have effective reading, okay? Ready? All right, so we have our frontal lobe, which makes sense, right, in the front. We have our temporal lobe, which is above our ear. And then we have our occipital lobe, which when you did the tapping, that's your occipital lobe. That has to do with sight. So isn't that crazy? Your eyes are clear up here, and it goes all the way back here.
So I'm allowed to give a comment.
Yes.
With trauma and abuse, sometimes there's really, really scrambled eggs feeling where the memory's gone and a lot of fear and all that. So that's the frontal lobe.
That's the frontal lobe. And your frontal lobe has to do with everything, like your organization and your perceptions. And if you children that have like executive functioning, generally, which would be children that also probably have other effects, they have problems organizing themselves and working through things, so your frontal lobe is really affected.
Jeez, that's crazy.
Yeah. Okay, and then we have our parietal lobe at the top up there. And again, that's just to orient you. All right. So all children, if they're typically developing, they learn to speak, right? Yeah. Your brains are wired to learn to speak. That is the job that they came here to do. Okay, so we're first looking at the left side of your brain, but we're looking at it in context of spoken language. So we're not yet to a reading brain. We're to like a little baby. Okay, what did they come to us with? So they came to us with, in their frontal lobe, an area called Broca's area. And Broca's area helps with speech movements of your mouth. Babbling babies are using that. And then when you have children telling you amazing stories and orally, guess what? They're using that too. So that is with them from the moment they look at their mama's face and they smile and goo and they seem to understand who you are, okay? Now, the temporal lobe, so that is going to be right above your ear. That has Wernicke's area. And that allows children to make sense of their world around them, kind of reason their way through, okay? Those things both seem like they would be helpful for reading, right? You have to be able to produce the sound, mm-hmm. and you have to reason your way through what you're reading. So, our bodies are amazing, and so we come wired for spoken language, but we do not come wired for reading. So, you will notice in a typical reading brain, we are going to recycle some of the things that we have naturally from our spoken language, but we reteach them what we want them to do for reading. Isn't that exciting? So I tell teachers that they're neurological engineers. If you're a homeschooling parent, guess what you also are? You are a neurological engineer because you are rewiring your little children's brains to become readers through good instruction. So we have to have sensitivity to the speech sounds. And we remember that's phonological awareness. So you're going to tap up here and think about sound. So what are we thinking about up here? Sound. Yep, left side is sound. Up in the front. And then we have back here, we recycle this area to become our letter sound network. Letter sound network, is there a reason for a baby to have a letter sound network? No. Reading is a new invention. And so as we teach phonics really, really well, guess what happens? We build this. And we can see this in brain scans. And I have what I feel is one of the most beautiful brain images in this slideshow coming up. And we'll kind of talk about the difference between a spoken language brain and a reading brain in just a minute using that image. But you can see how these are working together. So first you have to be sensitive to the sound. That sensitivity to the sound allows you to have this network built. And over time, with a lot of practice, you get pretty good at it. That's what we want. How many of you have listened to like six-year-olds try to read? It's painfully slow. It's painfully slow purposefully. Your brain, like any muscle, is developing a neural network here that hopefully will one day become really strong. But it starts out like anything, a little weak, and it's a lot of repetition and a lot of practice. And it's really hard to listen to sometimes. And you have to remember that you're letting them have that hard work because you want them to have a strong reading brain. Over time, oh, there's my pretty picture. I thought it was in a little one. Okay, so this blue ribbon, that blue ribbon is a neural network. Isn't that pretty?
Yeah.
So that network does exist in a spoken language brain. So your babies have that when they come. But that big, beautiful blue one, only until they have that network built through good instruction with sound and symbol connection. It does not exist. It will not develop unless they have some insight into how the letters and the sounds work. Some children pick this up pretty well. Some children, it's really, really hard. So I just like to have that image because I think it's really pretty. And you can see this is a net. When we talk about a network, it's legit a network. Do you see all those pieces working together? Firing to help the child read. So we have that letter sound connection still up here, and we're still in a typical developing reading brain. And we have all that hard work and practice that's super slow. But then over time, what happens? With enough practice, this gets so much better. And that is due to what we call the word form area. You will call it the letter box. Some people call it the letter box. I'm calling it a word form area. They mean the same thing. So after enough practice, we start to get a little bit better. And what happens is our little brain goes, oh, I recognize that word. Oh, I've had enough experience with that ending. Oh, I know what that letter is. And it just pops it out faster. But it only happens with enough repetition and practice and that network getting beautiful and strong, like we saw here. Okay? So you guys have this experience in real life. So I'm going to walk through. So we always can go between these two networks. The upper network is called a dorsal network. We're just going to call it the top. Okay? So we have a top network, and this is technically called a ventral network. I'm just going to call it the bottom. Okay? These two networks work together all of the time. And if you're like at a doctor's office and they give you a prescription for a medicine you've never seen, as adults, you go, oh, I'm going to use this network because that is what I need right now because I don't know that word. But if you know the word, guess what network you're using? This one. Isn't that awesome? So your children, you kind of see them kind of transition a little bit, but you always have both networks available depending on what is going to help you the most. Okay? So I have a sentence from Charlotte's Web. We're going to pretend we are in third grade, and we're reading, and we're a pretty good reader. So most of these words I know really well. So it is quite possible, said the old sheep, that you're, oh no, this word isn't bold because I might not know it. But guess what? My word formulary goes, oh, back here. And I'm going to sound that out, and I'm going to get to the word conniving. So that experience that you have at the doctor's office with some medicine that you don't see, your children do all the time. They switch back and forth, but they have to have both. If they don't have both, they can't switch. If you don't have both, what one are you using? The slow one.
Yeah.
You're using the slow one all the time, and it's exhausting. Okay? So I use this little image to just illustrate it. Okay? I have my treasure box for my litter box. I have my sound, and I have my letter, and if it all comes together, I get fireworks, and that's that beautiful neural network that we saw. I use different images because you never know which one parent people are going to like, so I kind of throw them all in there. Okay, struggling readers. What happens for them? So their speech sound system is usually fuzzy, so that's why the colors are a little bit muted. Okay, it's hard. They can speak maybe just fine. Maybe not, but the ability to break up the sounds is really hard, and it's crazy how hard it is for some of them. Because that is hard, the letter sound connection is hard and rusty. Because this is rusty and not quite efficient, guess what never develops as well as it should? The word form area. So it seems really slow and labored because it really is slow and labored because they only have access to this network for a long, 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 long time. It takes them a long time to build up enough experience here. The frustrating part is they usually, typically, a typical dyslexic has amazing meaning. They can understand all sorts of things. So that is a really frustrating experience to go through life with. But the good thing is your sound system, so tap your temporal lobe again, your sound system can be taught. We can teach that. And we can teach that earlier on and make it more sensitive. And we do that by a lot of sound play. Okay? Sound play with your children is exercising this area that might help them become better readers. So all your rhyming, alliteration, all that kind of stuff helps your children become sensitive to sound. We want that to happen in like preschool, kindergarten age. And we want really fast in kindergarten to be able to separate the sounds in a word. And yes, we're going to get into it a little bit more, but that's actually the crux. If we can get them to get there faster, that's going to help them more. So all those things set us up for more success. So basically, inefficient decoders show less word form activation than skilled readers do when we look at their brains. So this is my next cartoony image. So we have a small sound system. I'm seeing my letter. Remember, my eyes are here. But it's just weaving through this big, massive maze. And it's hard and labor intensive, and I get worn out really fast. And what do I not have? I do not have a treasure box. Okay? So this is a brain scan. At the top, we have a normal reader. So this is the right hemisphere, which we're not talking about. We're talking about, remember? We're talking about our left. And we can see those patterns that I just showed you. And then this is a dyslexic. This is like a weak word recognition activity. Okay? Without instruction, they will stay that way. Instruction is what changes it. Okay? All right. So quick review. That's a lot to throw at people. So children are wired for spoken language. Typically developing children have this from birth. Skilled reading recycles areas used for spoken language. The three areas needed for skilled reading are sound sensitivity, or that phonological, remember the sound. Supported through phonemic awareness instruction. I will touch on this a little bit more. Letter-sound connections, supported through phonics instruction, which connects with the alphabetical principle. The word form area, which is our faster route to reading. When we get there, we're very excited. Dyslexics generally show a core phonological deficit. It's sound perception in their brains. It might not have anything to do with their ears, has nothing to do with their eyes. It has to do with their sound perception inside their brains. It's really difficult for them, okay? It inhibits their ability to learn letter-sound relationships. and they develop that word form area slower, especially without good instruction. Okay? It doesn't have to be a life sentence. You might always be dyslexic, but there are lots of things you can overcome if you have good instruction and you have it early. All right, so we are to the definition portion of our presentation. So 3 years ago, Idaho adopted legislation for dyslexic children. This is what is written into code. I will explain a little bit as we go through it. When, as I'm reading, if you could read the bold parts with me, because those are kind of the most salient, important parts. So dyslexia means a
specific learning challenge
that is neurological in origin. It is characterized by difficulties with accurate or fluent or both
word recognition
and by poor spelling and decoding abilities, which typically result from a deficit in the
phonological component of language
that is often unexpected in relation to other cognitive abilities and the provision of effective classroom instruction. So if we can give you good instruction, you still might be dyslexic, but we're going to give you a really healthy dose, so it's not quite as devastating for you. Without good instruction, my uncle was completely illiterate, never had good instruction. He lived his life completely illiterate. I'll tell you what happened to my son as we go through, but obviously, because of what I do for a living, you know he had good instruction, right? So this is Idaho's definition. This is very similar to the old definition from the International Dyslexia Association. I started this work as a parent. So this definition feels manageable, and I felt like as a parent, I kind of could like wheel my way through what these terms meant and what I was supposed to do, because this is very similar to what the original International Dyslexia Association had. They just wrote a new one. It's exciting. It is so overwhelming that if I was thinking when I saw it, this is written actually for parents, if you think about it, because we want parents to recognize it so then they can either give the correct instruction themselves or go find a way to get it for them inside a school system or whatever. So it's really meant for parents, but when I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, I probably would have cried if I were a parent looking for help, and that's what I had to figure out. So we're going to go through it together, and maybe the rest of you won't be as scared as I would have been, but I would have been very overwhelmed to see this definition.
Well, that's a lot.
Just visually, I was like, who wrote that thing? You want to know who wrote it? Researchers. That's what they do, and we really love them. We love them, because without them, we wouldn't know what we know. But when it comes to, like, rubber hitting the road, this isn't that helpful unless you have somebody wheeled through it with you. So I'm going to do that with you. Okay, you ready? I know it's not going to be super fun, but I'm assuming some of you might actually be parents in here that have concerns. So it seems like I would be doing my due diligence to walk you through this sucker, okay? So I've highlighted what I felt went together. So color coding, I thought, might help a little bit. So we're going to start with the blue section. Dyslexia is a specific learning disability characterized by difficulties in word reading and or spelling that involve accuracy, speed, or both. And that's actually a good part to add, because for a long time, I would have teachers like, oh, they're just not fast. Okay, well, I don't really care if they're fast if they're inaccurate. You first have to be accurate. So I actually really like that addition. And that means, like, I know my letter sounds accurately, but I also know them quickly, right? Because if I'm too slow, I'm not going to be able to read. So I liked that addition. I'm very depending on the orthography. I'm like, this is not written for us, okay? So orthography just means the spelling system. So it is an International Dyslexia Association. It's an international definition. So they're like, we don't want people to just think that this is just for English. So they threw in the word orthography, but they could have said it in a much more friendly way. That's all it means is a spelling system. We speak English, so I'm going to be giving you, like, the English, what's relative to English, because there are parts in here that are not, I'm not going to say not related to English, because they are, but different spelling systems have different things that they're looking for, and that means the symptoms look a little bit different. So I'll kind of walk you through what that looks like, okay? All right. Feeling okay about the blue section? These difficulties occur along a continuum of severity and persist even with instruction that is effective for the individual peers. It's not too shabby. That's pretty straightforward. I like the continuum because we have children that maybe it's just affecting their spelling, and then we have children that can't get words off the page at all. So there is a spectrum. Persist even with effective instruction. So my son got really good instruction. I will tell you what he still struggles with. Dyslexia doesn't go away, but you learn to kind of navigate and cope, and you have something that used to be a super big weakness become tolerable. And that's kind of what his experience was, depending on where you are in that spectrum. It might be different. All right, ready for purple? The causes of dyslexia are complex and involve combinations of genetic, neurobiological, and environmental influences that interact throughout development. That seems pretty straightforward. It's not too bad. I kind of like that they threw in the genetic piece. I personally know I have genetics that are carrying this. So I appreciate that. That's actually why I do what I do, because I'm like, if I ever have grandchildren, I'm going to be one of you guys. They're not going to go to a regular school. They're going to come to grandma.
My grandma.
All right, we are to red. Underlying difficulties with phonological, so that's sound, and morphological processing. Okay, I don't, morphological. Okay, what this means is the meaningful units of language, prefixes, suffixes, syllables that have meaning, your root words and base words. In English, we're a sound system language. So morphemes are important, and we teach them very clearly and carefully to children. But our core deficit is in English going to be sound, so sound. But if I was in Brazil, it might be where they have a more morphological-based language, their symptoms might look different. Okay, we're not going to go into that because we don't need to. But that's why that piece is in there, because different languages have different units that are used to build their language. Okay, but we're English, and we're worried about sound. All right. Oh, I did finish. Are common but not universal, and early oral language weakness often foreshadow literacy challenges. When my son was three, I had two children at the time. My oldest son was very verbose and talked all of the time, and then my second child was nothing. And I knew that my one child was really gifted with language, but I also knew that there was something very wrong with this development. So I had a really good friend that was an SLP that lived close to me, and I said, hey, come on over, tell me what you think. And she was like, oh yeah, he has a huge speech impairment. That foreshadowed the difficulty he was going to have to read. All right, ready for green? Secondary consequences include reading comprehension problems and reduced reading and writing experience that can impede growth in language, knowledge, written expression, and overall academic achievement. This is the part that I am glad they added, this next part. Psychological well-being and employment opportunities also be affected. Although identification and targeted instruction are important at any age, language and literacy support before and during the early years of education is particularly effective. Historically, dyslexic children have not been given help until they're in their grade. That's too late. You have to help them earlier. And then the well-being, there is so much research that talks about the mental health concerns of children with reading disabilities. All right, so there you go. That's my quick unpacking of this massive definition. Okay, so phonological processing, just a little reminder. So phonological awareness is knowing how spoken words are made up of smaller sounds and being able to hear, separate, and work with those sounds in your head. That's a pretty parent-friendly definition. That's the core deficit that we see with dyslexics. So we're going to do a quick activity because there's different levels to phonological awareness. There's going to be easier tasks and harder tasks. So I'm going to read some sentences, and we're going to answer some of these questions, and you're going to see how it goes from easier to harder. Okay? So my sentence is, did you drive the Suburban? It needs to have new tires. How many sentences?
Two.
Okay. And the next one is, how many words? Did you drive the Suburban? It needs to have new tires.
10. 11.
All right. Now we're going to do syllables.
Oh, man.
Did you drive the Suburban? It needs to have new tires.
13.
All right. Now, this is ridiculous. We would never do this with children, but you're adults who could already read and speak. So I am doing this to kind of make you feel what it was like. You can feel how things get harder to easier. This is the hardest. Did you drive the Suburban? It needs to have new tires. How many sounds?
A lot.
A lot. It's ridiculous. Don't do it. It's 34. There are 34 sounds. Okay, so did you feel how it went from easy to hard? Your children feel that all the time, but they are going to do it at the word level. Okay? All right. So I like to use this image. The words are stuck together. Those sounds are stuck, and it's really hard to unstick them. And you felt that a little bit when I asked you to count sounds in a ridiculous task. But they have to do it in the smaller scale in order to learn to read. They have to be able to break it apart. So what are some PA tasks? I'm going to do a quick. This is actually an assessment. If you wanted to know if this is particularly difficult for a child, there's an assessment on that Padlet that I gave you. It's called the PAST assessment. It is not perfect, but it is a way to know. All right, we're going to start with some easy tasks. Say leapfrog.
Leapfrog.
Now say leapfrog, but don't say leap.
Frog.
Okay. Say carnation.
Carnation.
Now say carnation, but don't say car.
Nation.
Nation.
All right, say far.
Far.
Now say far, but don't say
R.
Say kite.
Kite.
Now say kite, but instead of say er.
Right.
That's super hard for kiddos, so if you can't unstick it. That's why this assessment tells you, like, oh, that is really hard for you. All right. Say sleeve.
Sleeve.
Now say sleeve, but don't say
sleeve.
Let's do say man.
Man,
but instead of a, say a.
Men.
Ooh, this is super hard for kids to struggle. It's so hard to move an inside sound. All right, let's do say dusk.
Dusk.
Now say dusk, but don't say s.
Duck.
That one's also written. Anytime you're moving something in the middle, it kicks their pants. All right. So you can do those types of activities, but you would use the manipulatives. I'm running out of time. I would show you how to do that. I was really sad that instruction isn't part of it. So there you go. If you want to know what they would look like, what do we need to help dyslexic children? So this is called a structured literacy circle. You teach everything on the inside. Okay? If you teach everything on the inside and you teach it well, you're going to help them. Okay? So we have phonology. Remember, phonologies are sounds. We have our sound-symbol connections, our letter and our sounds. So that's phonics. We understand syllable structure, and we're not counting syllables, but that the way syllables are structured can help us because every syllable needs a vowel. Morphology, that's the meaningful units, so the prefix, suffixes, bases, you're going to teach those explicitly. Syntax, so that's grammar. Semantics is how to pull meaning off in those sentences, and then sentence structure for writing, okay? That's what you got to teach, and guess what? You got to teach it to everybody. But for a dyslexic, you have to be so explicit. They have no intuition for this. So you have to be really careful with your explanations. Your diagnostic does not mean you're diagnosing anything, but it means like, oh, I taught a lesson. I saw they didn't understand it, so I'm going to support them with another support. Tomorrow we're going to practice some more. That's all that means. Systematic and cumulative, that means that the logic of my lessons flow. That I'm not one day teaching short A and the next day teaching OI. That I'm clear, have a clear scope and sequence that builds logically. Because if it's not logical, these children have no ability to sort through this stuff. You have to help them by being very logical and careful. Oh, and then handwriting. Handwriting is so important, especially for these children. You have to teach handwriting, and you're going to teach it really carefully in context to the letter sounds and their connections. They have to have handwriting taught well. All right, so this is from the handbook. From the state of Idaho. We're going to go through the myths, and I figured why rewrite it if the state of Idaho has already done it for me. So we're going to look, we're actually going to go down here and then work our way up. Boys are much more likely to be dyslexic than girls. Here's the answer. The prevalence rates of dyslexia in boys and girls are only slightly different. Boys are affected somewhat more often, but the ratio is about 1.4 to 1. So really not that big of a deal. Some studies suggest that girls in clinics tend to identify boys more frequently than girls, but that may be because they are more likely to have attention and behavior problems. Okay? The next one, dyslexia is a gift, and people with dyslexia are unusually creative and artistic and entrepreneurial. Okay, I'm going to answer this as a parent. My child's gifts and talents are his. They're not because of a disorder. So as a parent, like, I really wanted him to feel that way, but I wanted him to feel that way because of him. So I just think, like, we always want to think person first, not disability first. So just keep that in mind. We do want every child to feel that they have gifts and talents, but don't let the disability take it away from them. That's theirs, because that's who they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's just me talking from a mom, because I really love the message, but I also didn't want him to think that it was dyslexia caused that. He did. Okay? Dyslexia is rare. That's not true. 5 to 10% actually have severe dyslexia. 20% have some sort of level, because remember the spectrum. The main system of dyslexia is making reversals or seeing things backwards. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I hope that through today, you're like, no, that's not true. It's not. Did I talk about vision that much at all? I talked about sound. Our eyes are really important, and we love them because they help us see things. But beyond being able to send a message to my occipital lobe that is a letter, that's about it. Okay? And then, this is my favorite one. Dyslexia is a problem with vision, visual spatial reasoning, and or visual memory of words. Okay. This discusses, there is no evidence that colored overlays or print or colored lenses in glasses will help students learn to read, although some students may experience relief from eye strain. There is no research evidence to support vision therapies or visual spatial therapies. Okay, so that is often the first place parents end up. And if your child has a sound problem, it's a sound perception problem, vision therapy is never going to solve it. Okay, so there is a little infographic that kind of goes through this. This was written by Dr. Jane Ashby, who is an amazing researcher, who, guess what she researches? Eye movements. That's her specialty. And she's telling you, no, do not do that. And the very end, this includes structured literacy approaches that teach phonological awareness, sound-symbol relationships, word reading, and spelling skills. That's what you need to teach these children. This is coming from an eye movement researcher. That's telling you it's not eye movements if your problem is sound, okay? And then there is a statement from ophthalmologists. So if you have friends, this is all in the Padlet that I shared with you, but maybe give them a heads up that ophthalmologists say that's not going to help you learn to read either. And I told you I'd give you, this was the teaser. Remember, I showed you my son, and this is him today. So he is in Argentina. He still struggles with spelling. we could never get that to go away. Spelling is still hard. He spells at about a 6th, 7th grade level, but guess what? You need to have a computer to help you, but you have to be about 6th grade spelling to be able to get help. So I always felt like that was my goal. If I can get him to 6th grade spelling skills, then I know a computer can help him. And we got there. He is bilingual. And if you would have told me when this little guy was 3 years old that he was going to be able to speak Spanish and English, I would have told you, oh my gosh, I would just really like him to say a word. So this is like a miracle to me. He graduated high school with 14 college. He had an amazing high school experience his senior year and got a lot of things accomplished and did really well. He's planning on coming home in July, and he will go to college in September 2026. All of those things are amazing, and I didn't know if we would ever get there, but we did.
Good job, Mom.
Thank you. Yeah. There are a list of resources here. If you've never heard the story Sold a Story, that podcast, honestly, it's just good storytelling. I honestly think anybody who, even if you're not a reading nerd, that might be fun to listen to. It's a really good podcast. And then a list of resources. The slides are on the Padlet, and then a lot of the resources are linked there as well. Did I make it in my time frame?
It's so good.